Welcome to the Kaiju Podcast. I'm Ralph.
I'm Jorge.
And today we are talking about Gorath.
1962.
All right.
Sweet spot.
Oof. Boy. Okay. This movie kind of got shuffled around. I think I mentioned it to you. I don't know if I mentioned it on the show, but since I've been sort of self-quarantined, we're still in that era. I kind of went ahead and started creating artwork for our upcoming movies that we're doing. And because this one wasn't part of that, I hadn't seen any of the artwork, and it was like a last minute decision. Oh, let's watch Gorath. I'm like, okay, cool. Put it on. Had no idea there was a monster in this movie.
Yeah, and he's on the poster. But
oh, is he? Yeah, that's the thing.
When you look at the poster, a small picture, it looks like it's going to be something a la Mysterians or something.
It looks like
it's going to be a space or like Atragon or
Battle
in Outer
Space.
It's going to be a thing, and you're like, oh, yeah. Okay. I think it looks right. Like it's just going to be like a tokusatsu, just like a basic sci-fi. I didn't think there was going to be a monster sequence in it.
Right.
And then you're like, oh. And then I was
like
looking,
out of nowhere, it blindsides you.
Well, apparently it was shoehorned in that Ishiro Honda didn't want the monster sequence in it. But they're like, no, you got to put a monster sequence in it. And he regrets that he didn't fight them longer on it to try to keep the monster sequence out. The American dub. Now, we started at the American dub, and then when I was like looking at, I was, when we're watching a movie, if I'm watching American dub, I kind of try and look at what the difference is, because like on like the fan sites, they'll talk about what you get differently from one. From the Japanese version versus the English dub version. And this says it cut out the monster stuff in the dub.
Right.
And I was like, well, come on, we're a monster movie podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
We need to watch the one with the monster in it.
Yeah. I mean...
Because apparently in it, there's a part where like there are parts where they're looking at it, but they don't talk about what they're looking at. Like, I think they're looking at the dead body. After they finally kill it, apparently there's a shot of the corpse, and they're also them looking at it. You don't know exactly why they're looking where they're looking, but that's one of the things that I had heard was the big difference. Another thing, just because we started watching the English one, at the opening voiceover, did you listen to the English one at all? Did you watch this?
No, I did watch
that
trailer.
Because I was like, for a second there, I went, holy shit, Orson Welles? Oh. Because it sounded like Orson Welles was doing the opening. And then I was looking for Orson Welles in the credits, and I didn't find him. But I found Paul Frees in the credits. And Paul Frees does an impeccable Orson Welles.
Oh, that's funny.
And so he did that for – Paul Frees does like half the voices in this movie in the dub.
I might have to
In a
watch
sense,
it.
It's worth it for that because it's like – Paul Frees has a very distinctive voice that even when he's playing around with voices and stuff like that, there's still a lot of that because he has this rich sound in his voice, and there's a lot that – comes through, and there's a lot of people who sound like Paul Frees in this movie, and they're playing different characters, but there's only like four people or so that are doing the English everybody's lines, and there's a big cast in this.
Yeah,
there's a lot of different people, and like half of them are like Paul Frees.
Okay, I might have to check it out. I was blindsided by the monster. I was fine with it as just, you know, like Battle in Outer Space or Mysterians. So that was exciting because it came out of left field. Wasn't too keen on the design. It looked like Rankin Bass a little bit, like the seals that show up in those.
Yeah, there was a One of the things that came up in when I was looking up about this movie, the original plan was for it to be reptilian, but then they didn't want it to be a Godzilla.
Yeah.
So they went with a walrus.
Yeah, which is fine. It's, I mean, we haven't, we obviously haven't seen that before. But
yeah, not till Mandalorian.
That's right. I love this movie.
I love this movie.
You know what? I knew you love this movie because there's something that happens when we watch the movie separately and we don't really talk about them.
Yeah.
Until we start recording.
Yeah.
But every once in a while, when a movie grabs us, we'll get a text from the other person saying, "Oh,
have you watched it yet?
Have you watched it yet?" Or like a text being like, "Oh, look at this toy," or "Oh, look at this thing." It's like, "Oh, you obviously want to learn more about this movie and have been doing more research than normal."
Oh, you can tell that I'm digging deep.
Yeah.
When you get a thing. Yeah. Well, yeah, the thing that I sent you, there was like a great American trailer for it.
Right.
Old school style. We're like, see this.
This could really happen.
This. See, yeah. Oh, yeah. Never before seen shot in outer space.
Yeah.
Or something like scenes. But it was like worded. We're like, we're not really lying. It's like scenes never before shot in space.
This could actually happen. Pulse pounding excitement and stuff. And I'm like, I watched it after watching the movie. Yeah, this all makes sense. This is,
yeah, because I sent it to you. I go, watch it, but don't watch the movie first because it's spoiler.
Yeah. Okay. So just off the bat, I didn't take any notes. So
did you get that this movie takes place in like the 70s to the 80s?
No, but it was weird that the one guy said he had a robot suit. They'll be using these in the 80s. I just assumed it was like 20 years in the future. Like he was like, oh, in 20 years, everyone's going to be wearing these space suits. His robot costume.
Which I love. That's my cosplay piece for this movie.
Oh, I like the cool.
And the way it flips open.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I was thinking, I know what I would want to dress as. I like the orange jumpsuits with the helmets of the guys that were fighting the walrus monster. It's like a nice, easy cosplay thing.
Yeah.
This movie, in that trailer, it says, like something like pulse pounding excitement or something like that. The count, I'm jumping a little bit, but the countdown at the end was like literally was making me excited. Like I was like, oh my gosh, what is going to happen? This is crazy. The whole movie hinges on that moment. I really, really, really like this movie.
One of the interesting things about the Japanese version versus the little bits that I picked up from the American version, and also when I read about the differences, is also the American version is cut. They made it shorter. They shortened a lot of scenes, and they basically made it like it occurred in a shorter amount of time, because this movie, it takes years,
right,
for us like, to get this plan into place. It's much more realistic that way.
Yeah,
where it's like have to figure this out and how we're going to.
That's what's save exciting her. Though is you have the build up, like, okay, this thing's going to happen in 2 years. We're going to construct this stuff. We're going to do this crazy plan. There's hiccups in it, and it's like, how many days is this going to set us back? And they're like 60 days.
Right.
And
right.
There's all this stuff hinges on a clock that counts down to like 20 seconds. It's like the time frame of it being 2 years. I think it's 2 years. I think is awesome.
And it's also was cool was like the scene in the taxi cab where it's like, these are the people, these are the two guys that are worrying about this more than anybody in the world.
Yeah,
and they're like, "Hey, what do you think about this this Gorath star that's coming to headed for us?" It's like, I'm not worried about it. You know, we hear about it too much, and I'm sure that the people in charge will take care of it. And it was like going, "Wow, that's
yeah."
That was a really great kind of realistic kind of moment.
Yeah.
You know, there's this thing. There's a study that was done. This is a tangent, but it reminded me of this thing where it's like they were doing this test. They're studying public service announcements, and that if the public service announcement is too slick or too well produced, that the public does not necessarily do all the recommendations because they feel that it looks like someone's got a handle on it.
Like it's not dire.
Because the PSA is so well done, they're like, oh, looks like they got a handle on this. We don't have to worry about it because someone else is in charge.
Right. That totally makes sense. So it's you like, get that sound of like a number station or the weird like recording of a guy in a like using some weird antiquated microphone or something where it's all like staticky.
Yeah.
The emergency broadcast system audio where it just sounds like, yeah. Oh, that's crazy. That makes sense. This whole movie
the miniatures in this movie
non-stop
are amazing.
Non-stop. The way they're animated and every single time that one of the like rockets shot off the little flames to correct it.
Yeah.
All the repulsor rockets or whatever you call those.
Yeah. They're like, all right, they up the periscope and they're like, and all things move and the periscopes pop up and the rocket, when it's flying past the planets.
Yeah.
It's so great. Looks so homemade, but like in a good way.
Yeah. There's the one sequence where they start, I keep referring to it as Z-Plan, but it's, the South Pole operation.
Yeah.
When they decide to go ahead with it and it's just shot after shot after shot of construction vehicles.
Yeah.
Like they built those not to get torn down.
It's so great. Yeah. There's like the whole thing of knowing. Now, did you didn't know that there was going to be a walrus until the walrus showed up?
Yeah, it there was an earthquake and that happened in the movie. I'm like, okay, earthquake.
Now, because I told you to make sure you watch the Japanese, and it said because it cut out the monster, you knew there was a monster coming.
I think I skimmed over your
text. Oh, you did?
Yeah, because you said watch the Japanese version, and then you said I think I read something about stuff being cut out. And that's all I saw. So I was like, okay, cool. Because I think you said cut it out 6 minutes, cut out first. And I'm like, okay, that's good enough. I'm going to watch it anyway. I didn't look into it too much. No, completely blindsided. It just showed up out of nowhere to the point where
Is this going to be the walrus? Like once they're in like the South Pole and there's like that part where the thing collapses.
Yeah, the big hole. And it sets them back 60 days.
And they go out to the opening and kind of take a look. And I was like, oh, did the walrus do this? I kept waiting. So when the walrus is going to show up?
No, I was on board. I said, this is like Mysterians or Battle in Outer Space. It's just going to be rocket ships and stuff like that. I think what helped was the fact that the meteor or the imploded star was called Gorath. So I'm like, okay, this is called Gorath. That's Gorath. I'm not thinking about any other sort of villain or creature or anything.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like the Atragon rule. Right. Speaking of Atragon, the captain of Atragon, the deserter is the captain in the first crew
that's right,
gets sucked into the star.
Yeah, that was cool, dude. Like, okay, everything about that, like it's what's fun is it takes a kind of a, I don't want to say realistic approach, but the acting is very grounded in reality. The situation is way sci-fi.
The peril of the first crew,
right,
it's so good. Now, part of it is because I started with the dub, and then I started over again in Japanese, and the captain's speech is better in the Japanese. Mm-hmm. The crew's reaction in the Jap is better. The part when like they're saying, "Listen, we're not going to go back. We're not going to make it. Our job is to get as much information and send it back to them so that we can basically help them solve this problem that's right. heading to Earth, essentially." And they all have really great, real moments of accepting that this is their fate. And then they all shout hurrah.
Yeah.
And then get on with it, and just it's just makes it that much more heartbreaking that they're just there's like, let's do this, and they and that extra like just kind of, you know, cheerleading thing of the just the hurrah. I was like, wow, that was powerful.
Yeah. Another thing that I really liked was the crew of the JX2 coming together, going over their captain's head to like plead for them to
go on the mission.
Yeah. Were they also a rock band? Or are they just like singing?
You know,
I kind of I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I really wanted to find the translation of that song.
Yeah.
Apparently it's they're singing about space exploration.
I feel like it lended to their camaraderie. I think it showed that how, you know, they are a tight knit group.
Yeah, I was like, when you steal a helicopter with someone, you bond. And they're singing in a stolen helicopter. And it was funny that later they're playing the music at that party or something. They're doing the same song. It's also Merry Christmas with the people walking by with like birthday balloons and birthday hats.
Yeah. As a Christmas party, I guess.
The massive miniature set of the launching pads.
Yeah.
It started with like just a couple of little fake cars in the foreground just driving off. Mm-hmm. And then just panning across and seeing all the rockets and all the different little launch areas. Right. That is an incredible set.
I want like clean HD quality desktop wallpapers of Toho rocket bases. Like all of these, like in Destroy All Monsters and stuff, where it's like this like grass, this big grass field with just this super 60s space agey rocket. They all look so awesome. That's what's fun about this movie is it all the acting is grounded in reality. Everybody's playing it very serious, but it has that look, that 60s Toho space look, and it's like exactly what I want. Like it's like I like campiness in like these movies, but there was something about this where I don't know how this works. I don't know how I still buy into the drama when I know it's like miniatures that are, you know, from the 60s. Like it looks like Thunderbirds, but for some reason, like the storytelling still gets me
totally
to where I like feel for every single character. I don't know what's going to happen next. Like we've the fact that they set up the JX1 crashing, it's like, okay, so this is going to be a real issue for the second group. Like this isn't an easy mission.
Right. Yeah, and like so when they're like practicing in the zero gravity room.
Oh, they're like kicking each other.
They're like they're like messing around, and the other technicians are being like, "This is serious."
Right.
And they're right. Like they keep like being goofy and laughing and stuff and like, "Stop it."
Yeah. It's almost like they need like those moments of levity just because they probably understand the real weight of the situation, but you know, they're trying to keep like good mental health, you know.
This also had a lot of, you know, decent scenes, like chunky scenes of just bureaucrats, you know, just like
it reminded me of Shin.
Yeah, totally. A lot of meetings they go, no, why did they do this? Oh, who changed the mission? All that kind of stuff. Like, it was just like, yeah, there was a lot of just scenes of people talking about stuff like that. It was really interesting. I like there's a part where they were talking about how the Japanese rocket technology was better than everyone else's rocket technology.
Well, I mean, is the 70s, is the 80s.
The UN Science Council, and talking about what we can do with this, and all the different people jumping in. It was great, because also then it's kind of cool seeing Japanese subtitles that show up on
the
right-hand side.
Yeah.
Vertically, with exclamation points at the end for a lot of them.
Yeah.
high voltage discharge vibrators.
Yep.
Whatever those are.
Ouch.
Yeah. The fact that the plan is we're gonna move the Earth
right
out of the way.
Right.
It's
insane.
That is great. Classic kind of science fiction style,
right?
Like, and then, that's our solution.
So I'm watching this, and you think of any time like a new movie comes out and Neil deGrasse Tyson like picks out holes of why things wouldn't work, and I'm like, these guys are going to move the entire Earth off of its rotation. I'm like, this is going to do some serious damage, and I'm like there's no way that this isn't going to like mess the whole planet up. I'm like, we're screwed if we try to do this. And then as it turns out, it does screw with the planet. Like it's a weird plan, and I keep calling it Z plan because it seems so far fetched. Like it was at the first Gamera movie where they had a Z plan,
yeah,
which was to capture Gamera in a dome and send him to space. Like it's so insane. This
dome rocket.
Yeah. This thing is so insane. This is the most insane plan. We'll immediately jack everything up, and kind of does. Like tides get shifted, or you know, like 10 feet, and mountains are collapsing and stuff. There's something about the imagery of seeing Earth with a rocket coming out the bottom.
Yeah, that was really awesome. It's great because it's basically a disaster. Aster picture,
yeah,
yeah, and in a sci-fi movie, there's the scene when the guy is about to leave, like he leaves soon, and he goes to visit the girl to give her the bracelet or something,
yeah,
or the necklace or the piece of jewelry,
yeah,
and he's like, she's like, I can't accept this. Because her fiance was on the original crew.
Yeah, the GX-1.
And he then takes the guy's picture and throws it out her window.
Right.
And then, I don't know why this shot is in there, but it's interesting that when she looks over the balcony, there's a crowd surrounding the picture and looking up and pointing at where it came from.
Yeah. But there's like cops there too.
Kind of weird. Then later, uh-huh, when that guy gets amnesia,
yeah,
they're like, here, this is a picture of your girlfriend. And I was like, she's his girlfriend now?
I think they were just trying anything. Oh, I think I know. Because they already took him to the sister's house, right? So maybe he thought that she...
No, this was when he was still in the ship. When he was still... Yeah, I think they hadn't come back yet. And they were like, kind of like, he had pictures of the girl in his wallet or something. They were showing him pictures from his wallet.
So he's like a stalker, though, right?
Girlfriend. I don't know.
Like, I thought that was...
Maybe throwing the picture out the window is the move.
I think he was... I think he's kind of a bad guy. And it was kind of interesting to see him come face to face with Gorath. Like... Almost like, I don't know. There was something interesting about him not being a perfect guy, you know? Like, I feel like a lot of these movies, you have the boyfriend and the girlfriend, and they're always pretty much happy. Like, this is like a weird strained relationship that we don't normally see in these movies. And it kind of, it grounded it more in reality. And I think like seeing him come back to that apartment with amnesia,
they definitely,
it was like
make
powerful.
Him...
It was like really good.
Yeah. He's such a fuck up at the start of the movie. Right. And no one, and everyone's like, you know, it's like he's like immature or something. And I was like, why didn't you grow up or whatever? It seems like he's a disappointment to the world.
Right.
And then he becomes like this, you know, the hero of this section of the, you know, as far as like the, the frontline people.
It was a nice take, because you know, it felt more realistic than other disaster movies. Usually, you know, disaster movies, you have someone that falls in love, they get separated, and the whole goal is to get back together. And this one, he's an asshole, doesn't deserve to be with her, but then like loses everything, loses his memory, and then have him come back, and like now he has to like rely on her to jog his memory. But it like, it's, I don't know, it's super unconventional. I've never really seen that in a movie. I mean, it makes him more sympathetic at the end, but I do like that kind of arc, that arc of him big going from a-hole to sympathetic and kind of a hero. But at the same time, it's like, you know, the way heroes are portrayed in movies are usually good guys.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of interesting to see like this kind of a-hole. I mean, he threw her dead boyfriend's picture out, and she kind of had hope that he was still alive.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, whole, like,
get over it.
Yeah. And I'm like, I don't know how much time has passed, but still, if she still has the picture up, she's obviously still in the denial stage or grieving or something. And it's just like, wow. Cause I was like, screw this guy. yeah.
I liked, one of the things I like about in the visions of the future was that it seemed like each country had its own space station. Like each country had their own international space station.
It's like, okay, so this is 1962. United States landed on the moon in 69. So in 62, you can project, like, that was the big thing. Like, technology-wise, that was the big next leap that that everyone was going to make. Like, the space race was on, and we'll all be able to explore space around the world. The message at the end of this movie is kind of, it's nice that there's something that's going to threaten the entire world, and everybody comes together. And like, it's kind of a nice ideal sort of world to live in, where everybody works together and we all have our own spaceships and we all go explore the same thing. And I kind of enjoyed that aspect, especially now with what we're dealing with. I'm assuming by the time this airs, we'll still be dealing with it. is the virus, and how like this is affecting everybody. And it's kind of interesting to see how it was portrayed in this movie, where it's this, like, the Gorath will destroy us. It just takes things out left and right. Like, it takes out a comet and just, like, absorbs it.
And it's getting bigger.
Yeah, and we know if it touches us, that's it. It's over. I thought all of that was really cool, and I liked the UN stuff. I liked that.
Yeah, the whole where it says that mankind was separated into white, black, and yellow before the UN.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I like that the different characters in the UN spoke different languages, even though I think it was either English or Japanese, but. Like that also kind of grounded
different
in
accents to give them different accents. Yeah. The construction, like, not only was it ships and helicopters and bulldozers, but they put little guys in them.
Yeah.
There's little guys, and like every bulldozer had like a little guy in it.
Or the two, like there's like two guys standing on the catwalk overlooking.
Yeah, just standing there. Yeah.
And they didn't. Landing. They weren't animated. They just were there.
No,
and that's
they
enough.
Were like, yeah, they're like kind of like the models, like for like a model train set.
Right, just like the still. Conductor in the station.
So, that jet with the. That can land straight down.
That fought the walrus?
Yeah.
Yeah, with the laser?
When it first comes and lands inside the dome?
Yeah.
Man.
Everything. Everything in this movie is awesome.
You know what's great was the guy, what's his name, Kanai? The guy gets amnesia. And where they're giving him, he's the one who's going to pilot the solo flight out. To you know, get a closer look at Gorath.
Yeah.
And they're like, the capsule. You gotta, yeah. And he's like, yeah. He says, listen, you gotta do this. And he's like, Roger. He says, hey, don't Roger me yet. And he goes, okay, Roger. No, stop. Don't Roger me. I gotta tell you all this stuff. And I was like, that was an interesting kind of thing too.
It's almost like he had a like, death wish.
This isn't a suicide mission. You're gonna go and you're gonna get it. And you don't get too close. You got to come back, and you know we got to get this right.
He was already bracing himself for a suicide mission.
Yeah. Well, it's like in a sense, he was like, I think it was he. I think he was part of like his that's kind of like the moment where he really grew up in a way. Like we're like, this is where the foolishness finally stopped.
Yeah.
Then he didn't really happen, and then the ship little side thing opens up. And they pull the little ship out. It's so cute. Oh, I love that.
But I don't know why. Like, how come the drama still works even though there's stuff like that? Like, it's still, like, everything still works.
I don't know. I don't know if it works with everybody.
Maybe not. But maybe I'm just used to little spaceships models and stuff. But I feel like, I don't know.
And his ship... Like when he's getting close and Gorath is sucking in debris the whole time. Mm-hmm. And there's like that big chunk of debris hits his ship and puts dents in the side of it.
Yeah.
So great.
I thought Gorath looked cool. It had like kind of a translucent look with the spots and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like the model or whatever they used to make it, like maybe like a fiberglass or something. I don't know. But I thought it had a cool look and it was imposing. Like I was like, oh shit, man, this thing sucks. I definitely don't want it crashing into Earth.
I loved that the guys coming out had to pretend gravity. They were like doing big bouncy steps to make it like they were in zero gravity. That was really great.
Yeah.
When they go to rescue him or to hook up the capsule when they're bringing the capsule back, and they kind of jump out to the capsule. And then to come back, they have these little guns that kind of shoot little jet propulsion to come back to the ship. Thought that was rad.
All of the
spacewalk guns.
Yeah, all of that jet propulsion stuff looks so awesome. And I was like, I don't know if it was animated or if they actually had them in the models, but they moved perfectly. Every little movement that one of those little rocket boosters like shifted the rockets around, it always like matched up perfectly with the movements. It was awesome. Like the spaceships look fake, but they tried to use like real physics on the ships.
So the plan of embedding rocket engines into the Earth, just like basically it's like burying rockets.
Yeah, was it 500 miles below or 5 miles below,
and just like the surface, the outer, the sticking out, basically it's like all these rockets that are just kind of like was so great. And then like it's a very simple shot of all those things firing at once,
mm-hmm.
and they just keep panning across it all, and then they cut to the Earth and you see like a glowing light where it's happening, and then it starts working. So great. I like when, because like they dock at that one space station, the one that has like a flat disc.
Yeah.
And the way they dock, it almost looks like they crashed into it, but it just kind of like slides onto that disc, and that's it.
Yeah.
That's all it takes.
Mm-hmm.
I liked also like when they land the jet and the little landing gear that comes down.
Mm-hmm.
Just the little pieces, all the little miniature stuff, so good.
Yeah. This is another one of those ones where I just need to see behind the scenes stuff. I need to see guys walking around building that stuff.
Yeah.
Especially the construction site. This scale. Is so detailed. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, apparently, in the trivia, they said that, a lot of like the ships, I think helicopters, and things, as far as like for like the Earth ones were actually just Revel, models. Okay. That they made.
That's cool.
Gorath's so strong, he pulls Saturn's ring off of it.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out what was happening there. I thought Saturn's ring was trying to reach out and attack it. But then I figured it out. There's something about, like, it just, like, just everything's in its way. It takes out the moon, right?
Yeah,
that's the one that takes out the moon. Yeah.
It's the premise that it's first, it's like, I like the premise of it that like, hey, there's this thing and it's 6,000 times Earth's mass.
But it's smaller than the Earth.
And they're like, we can't find it. And they're like, it's right in front of you. And then they're like, oh, it's smaller, but it's 6,000 times Earth's mass. And then they're like, they come back and they're like, no, it's now 6,200 times Earth's mass. Because it's been collecting things on the way.
Right.
And it's just going to keep getting bigger. It's kind of great.
It's essentially the Blob.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Space the Blob.
Oh, man.
Space the Blob. Space Katagari.
Kanai is in the apartment when the countdown really starts hitting, like they're like at the 2 minute mark, and nothing has been able to jog his memory. And then he starts watching TV, and then he starts getting these like crazy flashes. So he starts getting his memory jarred by the visuals of Gorath on TV as the countdown's happening, and he passes out.
Yeah,
and it's like the beat of the movie's going with the clock. Like the clock is ticking, and they have a clock set up. It's like a Toho Samsung clock, I guess. That's counting down the seconds of when Gorath is going to hit the Earth or supposed to hit the Earth.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh man, so this is a big deal. Like all the world is watching, and then this dude passes out, and I'm like, oh my gosh, are we going to see what happens? And then he wakes up, recognizes everyone, and he's like, his first thing out of his mouth is, what happened with Gorath? So right. He's more concerned with other people than himself, which is a change. And then the guy says, oh no, we still have like a minute or something. I forget what he said.
Yeah. It's classic. You get a traumatic event. Causes amnesia. Usually, like it's a knock on the head that gives someone amnesia. But this is a traumatic event, gives him amnesia, and he needs another. He has to have the equivalent traumatic event to reverse it.
Right.
It's like Dr. Sardonicus. Did you ever see that movie?
No.
Dr. Sardonicus is it's this William Castle movie where in the opening. Essentially he had this awful wife, and he lived with his dad, and his dad would always play the lottery every year, and then his dad dies and the numbers come up for the lottery, and it's like his dad's numbers or something, but they realize that they'd buried his dad. This is apparently a lottery that doesn't come around that often or something.
Yeah.
But they buried him with his ticket, and his wife pressures him to go and get the ticket off of his dad's dead body that's been buried.
Uh-huh.
And in going into the crypt to get his dad, he was a traumatic experience that his face was frozen in this really creepy, teethy smile.
Okay.
And he couldn't move his mouth. It was stuck like that. So Sardonicus is this, you know, this movie about this doctor that gets brought over and kind of kept prisoner to help heal this guy. And his plan is to heal him. He has to basically have the same traumatic event. So he has to put him in the crypt with his dead dad again to loosen it. And then there's this thing at the end where the audiences were allowed to vote. You kind of thumbs up or thumbs down if you felt the guy should survive or not. And
they switched the reel.
Supposedly there'd be two endings, but word on the street is it might be apocryphal that there are actually two and that people always voted thumbs down at the end anyways.
That's funny.
But yeah, it's like that kind of, I like that. It's like it's him looking at Gorath again and seeing, and the shots that are like where you see like it's exploding and stuff like that, mm-hmm. where they cut to actual like stuff was great. You know what's great? The slideshow.
Yeah.
Like here's all the shit that's gonna happen to the Earth. Boom. Yeah. Check this out. Boom. Boom. And they're like nice little paintings. That was kind of cool. And then I liked where they're creating so much heat in the South Pole that it's melting the ice, mm-hmm. and it starts flooding the rocket engines that are firing. Like they're starting to get flooded with water. But that was a cool like, did they account for that? Is that going to be a problem?
Yeah, that's what's fun about it is, you know, there's so many people working on this project, and you're just like, so many things could go wrong that you don't like. I feel like this movie, the way this movie is set up, that with nothing going smoothly, that you don't know if Gorath is going to hit the Earth or not. Like, it felt like, you know, usually the movies in the 60s like this, like sci-fi movies, have like happy endings, you know, until like maybe like Planet of the Apes or something, you know. So I'm like, I don't know. But for some reason, I felt like I don't know if this is going to end right.
The peril seemed real. Also, as like just leading up in this movie, we're like going, all right, here's the deal. We have two options. We either destroy this thing or we have to move out of the way.
Yeah.
And just being like, and them going through it and just still coming back to, we can't destroy it.
Yeah.
And so we have to do this other thing. Also, after they do succeed and they move the Earth, and it goes whizzing by. And then the guy's like, all right, now we have to get it back. We have to put it back. Because, yeah, it's like the aftermath of what that must be.
Yeah.
And, A, how do you move the Earth back into orbit? You have to construct a whole nother set of rockets in the Arctic?
Maybe. And they couldn't do that originally because they said the Arctic is covered in water.
Right, it's just water up there. And then, also, the whole, we don't have a moon anymore. They don't address the fact that we now don't have a moon and how important the moon is for, like, our oceans and stuff.
Yeah, they did mention that the tides had turned 10 feet, 10 miles.
That they rose, yeah.
It kind of leaves you hanging, like, it's funny because it's like, okay, we have this plan. We only have so much time to do it in. We got to do this first before we could think about the after effects caused by the plan. So it was like, it felt, even though it takes place over 2 years, it still felt urgent. And like, we'll get to it. We have to succeed first, no matter what.
Right.
And we'll get to that later. And it kind of leaves you with that at the end with the two guys from the UN discussing that, saying we have to move it back. What was the line they said at the end that I really enjoyed, was when the doctor is looking through the periscope to make sure that Gorath passes, and Gorath passes. And what does he say? I think he just says, are we okay? Is that what it was?
Oh, right. But, yeah. It's the one thing where Yeah, the guy says to him in English, and he answers him in English.
Yeah, I like that moment too, because those are the two guys that know what's going on. Like, they're the guys that need to relay this stuff to the news outlets, and it's just a moment between two guys. Like, it was a success, and they both kind of celebrate and hug, and it's like, it's kind of fun to see that, because that's not stuff we see. I've never seen a UN meeting. I've never been, you know, you never see like those kind of interactions with like world leaders or stuff. So that little moment was like kind of fun. Like, it was celebratory. But it was just a moment between two people, two humans from, you know, I think it was an American and a Japanese man, in that scene, but there was something about that moment that I really, really enjoyed. And it was very hopeful, even though it does get followed up with, we got to move the Earth back into position. And that's very foreboding, but it was kind of a nice sort of happy ending, you know, even though the Earth is in awful shape, but it's almost like, okay, we got through that. Now we have to move forward to fix it. And it was, it's just a moment of relief for those guys.
I really like dug it. The way that they watched the clock, and then he says, "We did it."
Yeah.
It's "We did it. We did it." They're watching the clock. I just went and looked at it. They're watching the clock. And you see the clock get past it, and then he goes and he's got to look in that little periscopy thing.
Yeah.
And then he sees that it's moving away from us.
It's like the culmination of 2 years of careful planning and hiccups, and all of this stuff just boiled down to, we did it.
By the way, it's
just such a good moment.
The American guy, the "we did it" guy.
Yeah.
His look is curious. Like, he almost... he's just one or two generations away from the Eye of the Beholder Twilight Zone face.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, his face is, he looks a little Eye of the Beholder.
Yeah.
I like how it's like not everything is resolved at the end, as far as like, now what do we do on Earth?
Yeah.
And the whole...
But it's that message of, we have to continue to work together.
We will rebuild. We'll make it better. Yeah, yeah.
Like, a battle was won, but there's still the war. And, we, you know,
yeah.
The message of working together, we've seen in movies before, but I liked it in this one. Because the situation was so dire. it really worked. And it was like the solution was, the only way to stop us from this situation is everybody coming together. You know, it's not like Armageddon, where we send up like six Americans to blow it up. You know, it felt like a global effort, which I really appreciated.
Yeah, this is apparently Ishiro Honda was really proud of this movie for that message, mm-hmm. basically.
Yeah.
Which is also kind of why he's bummed out that the Wobber sequence is in it.
It didn't need it. I liked it because, holy shit, there's a walrus.
Yeah, it doesn't really fit.
Yeah, and it could easily be taken out. Easily.
Yeah, as it was. Yeah.
So, like I said, I would have no problem going and watching the American version. But, I thought it was great. I don't think I could put it in my top five just because it's not very kaiju heavy.
Yeah, but I like this movie a lot.
Yeah, I feel like if we had a non-kaiju sort of list, this would be in top five. Like this in H, or the Human Vapor.
Yeah.
You know, like...
Yeah, as far as... I feel like if we had a non-kaiju, like...
I mean, it's just a Shiro Honda, right?
Yeah, Yeah, I feel like our whole top five would be Shira Hondas.
Right.
In non-kaiju movies.
Because that's all we watch.
Mainly, those are the ones that we've been watching
right.
for this particular podcast.
And then Jaws.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's what like it's funny. Like, he's just pumping out these movies. He does so many of these movies. And, like even though, like, for every Dagora, there's a Gorath. And it's, like, it's hard to know which ones are going to be, like, really strike a nerve with us and which are just kind of going to kind of fall flat. This one, I had no expectations. But, man, oh, man. It was a really good movie. I think this and The Human Vapor put me back in the, like, camp of, like, I just love
Ashira Honda. Yeah, this might be my favorite of his non-kaiju ones.
Yeah.
This might be my favorite of them.
Yeah.
And the dog finally pushed away into the door. Hey, buddy.
Oh, speaking of that, there's that one shot where the streets were empty and there's just a dog.
That one dog, that one random dog.
Just on the sidewalk, just staring up into the sky. Yeah, and it's like, even the dog knows it's in peril. Knows.
That was so weird.
But it was like a moment. Like, it was like these small moments where you're like, oh, even the dog knows something's up. Like, it's like everybody was afraid of this thing. Man, it was great. I loved it. I you know, it makes me, like, this is the kind of thing that makes me glad that we watched this, or that we started this podcast, because I would probably have never watched this movie in my life, ever.
Yeah.
And I'm so happy that I know it exists. Yeah, there's some, like, duds in there.
Yeah, I was like, what? Yeah, I'm
trying there's to some Rigas.
Matango
was one. Fine. Oh,
yeah. I mean, as far as, like, ones that you were just like, that why we're grateful that we did this and went did deep dives in
Frankenstein,
Human Vapor,
all Ashira Honda, so even if there's some Ashira Honda we missed, I'll probably go watch them now because of the show.
Not only that, it makes us want to seek out good copies of them.
Yeah.
Because you want to be able to, not only that, that fact that this show made us discover that archive.org when we were trying to find places to
right.
find movies. And I was like, man, this place is chock full of all these movies.
Yeah. You want to talk about the next episode?
Yeah.
We got Harryhausen and Dinosaurs.
Back to America.
Yeah. So we're taking a little bit of a shift. We're going to be watching The Valley of the Guanji. I think I messed up the title.
Cowboys versus Dinosaurs.
Yeah. Excited to see it. I think I've seen bits and pieces. I think I've seen a cowboy lasso a dinosaur in footage. And you go, oh, what's that footage from? And then you find out it's from this. Cool. I'm excited to talk about that. We'll have that on kaijupod.com, where you will also get links to our Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. And yeah, man, until next time, I'm gonna go start rebuilding this hole.
I'm gonna dress up like a robot and start harassing people.
Oh yeah, that was a cool suit.
Yeah, it's so classic.
It looks like a tin toy
robot. Yeah, that's exactly what it looked like.
Yeah,
and I was like looking at it trying to figure out if it was made from found objects or not. Like, I was like kind of really trying to attend, cause like it was really well fabricated.
Yeah. And it moved cool too. I like when he rolled up on those police officers and they were just like utterly confused.
Yeah.
His Christmas party outfit.
it really made me like, I want to make a robot costume, figure out like what Home Depot bits to put together. Like hoses.
Yeah,
and
hoses with the spiral coil in it.
Yeah, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I always think of like Conan, the robot on the toilet.
Yeah.
that real basic claw hands robot.
Or like Whitney and the robot, which is like part R2-D2, part vacuum.
All right. All right, cool. Yeah, let's get out of here.
Alrighty.
Alright.